Hello and welcome to Hell. My name is Luke and today we have a special episode. I'm joined by Dave from Manchester St. Pauli and Gary, formerly of Glasgow St. Pauli. We're going to have a quick chat about what's been happening with the international fan clubs. We've been promising an episode like this for a while now. Good to have the perspective of people who were actually involved. There's some questions that haven't been answered regarding it. Talks with the FCSR that, you know, the details haven't really come out just as yet. So it'd be interesting to hear their point of view. But thanks for doing this, Gary and Dave. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. You know, it's been an interesting few months and in a sad way, but you know, hopefully time, they say, heals all wounds, so let's hope for that.
I suppose it's not going to heal all wounds for Glasgow St. Pauli, right, Gary? You guys had to dissolve in the end. How are you feeling about it now? Are you still disappointed or have you come to terms with it?
Disappointed in the club still, but come to terms with the fact that our supporters club and many others don't exist anymore.
Yeah. And how did Glasgow St. Pauli come to be? Like, you're probably one of the largest international supporters clubs, right?
How it started was myself and another member. I'd been gifted Nick Davison's book, Pirates, Punks and Politics, and I passed that around to a few friends. Some of us had been over. I'd already been over in 2010. So by the time I came to read that book, it was in 2014, I think it was out. So anything that I'd experienced in 2010, it was given a bit more of an insight into it from Nick's perspective. And just at the very end of the book, there's a paragraph where he just mentions, you know, start up a supporters club yourself. So we did. We passed around the book to a few people. Everyone took to it in the exact same way. And we decided to start a supporters group in the model of Yorkshire St. Pauli, who had been doing a lot of the Football for All charity initiatives. So we wanted to do something that was going to be more than just a supporters club. It was like a charity, unofficial organisation, if that makes sense. We primarily wanted to make sure that with the numbers that we had of members that we were able to do some good. So, that's essentially the start of it.
And you mentioned, you know, raising money and all that. You did a lot of that, I think, in your the statement you put out about dissolving. Mm-hmm. It was nearly 100 grand you just raised in the end.
Yeah,
it's incredible. And so that was for organisations in Hamburg and in Glasgow, is that right?
Asmara's World in Hamburg, who I think she primarily supports unaccompanied minors. So we'd done a couple of initiatives to take to buy tickets for 30 kids to go to games. We'd done that, I think, 3 years in a row. And then, yeah, just various charities throughout Scotland.
Very good. Sad to see us go, especially after hearing all the good that's been done. Dave, what about Manchester? How did you guys form? How long has it been?
Very, very similar circumstances. So 2017, a few people who'd been hanging around the fringes of Yorkshire. I think that's the common thread for us all, is we look at Yorkshire as kind of like the mother organisation of us all, and really set the standard. So a few of us who've been hanging around the fringes of that got together, and very similar vibe, trying to do, you know, things both in Manchester and that connect people between Manchester and Hamburg, raising money for initiatives here and there, putting on screenings so people can watch the games and engage with them and It's been a whirlwind adventure that's led to making many great friends around the world.
Very good. And Gary, so was there any connection with Celtic and St. Pauli at the stage that GSP got set up, or did that come later?
It was never a thing. There was never any connection of... We'd over 50 members in the time that we'd done it. Some of those members were Celtic supporters. Some were Hearts supporters, Ayr supporters, Liverpool, you know, with different members who supported their primary club, if you like. But it was... Mm-hmm. It was never a... If anything, we avoided it because we didn't want to be exclusive to... It was Glasgow, so it's obviously taken in quite a broad church of people, so we didn't want it to just be a Celtic thing. Obviously, the Celtic partnership and friendship had existed. One of our members was key in setting that up, like back in the 80s and stuff, like just the crossover of fanzines meeting each other in St. Pauli and in Glasgow, but we never encouraged any sort of Celtic friendship, if that makes sense. We didn't hide it. We were a St. Pauli supporters club. We weren't a Celtic supporters club with St. Pauli fans. You know, it was primarily all about St. Pauli.
Yeah. I think that's important to note as well, because a lot of people seem to think that Glasgow, St. Pauli and Celtic are like synonymous with each other, and Celtic fans and GSP go hand in hand, but it's not the case. So.
No, I mean, there's been fallouts within supporters clubs, like obviously between Celtic and St. Pauli over the years. It was never anything that we had any opinion on. You know, like, one of the main fallouts was obviously to do with what's going on just now as well, but it was something that we had no... It wasn't in our interest, really. We'd nothing to do with it. A lot of the misconception all the time whenever we met people over there or here was it must just be a Celtic thing. And 7 years of being a supporters club, it was something that never went away, and I understand why, but it was certainly never encouraged from us.
Right, okay, so I guess the main topic of our podcast today is going to be what happened between the international fan clubs and St. Pauli over the letter that was published, I think, October 10th. Is that right? In response to the club's statement on the October 7th attacks. So could you just tell us a bit about how that letter came to be? Was it was in response to a post that the club made on social media? Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. The club put the statement out for, I think the club statement was October the 10th. It was a just before a Sunday game, wasn't it? Which was, you know, condemning Hamas's attacks in Tel Aviv, and especially extending sympathy to the club's friends at Hapoel underneath as part of that. And sometime within the week following, it came across a couple of channels, didn't it? There was a Twitter group chat, and another, I think there was another channel somewhere where it was being discussed amongst various pockets of international fans to put, I think the term used was a counter statement to basically question why the club had only viewed this conflict through one lens. That's And within that, then the message that came out sort of grew. I don't know if you agree. That's kind of how it came about, Gary.
I think in terms of like all the supporters clubs being involved, then certainly from our side of things, we'd responded to the clubs. I think it was the day of the attack. It was the 7th of October. The club had put something out following what had happened. And we just posted basically stating that they're absolutely correct to be doing so and condemning what happened. However, it'd be great if they were to also condemn what's been happening prior to that attack, which you'd mentioned earlier on, Luke, that we'd obviously had like a bit of a large presence online in terms of followers. So that got out to a few people, and obviously the people that it got out to in Germany, for whatever reason, unleashed a barrage of claims of anti-Semitism towards us. From there, that grew and it didn't really stop. Other supporters clubs experienced the exact same stuff, and that's when the need for a statement from all supporters clubs was spoken about, purely because everyone disagreed with the fact that the club had stayed silent prior to it, but the fact that they were then receiving some pretty vicious online attacks. We wanted to put out something that was collaborative.
Yeah, and so I suppose there's two aspects to this. There's the club sort of not mentioning the plight of Palestinians in their initial statement, but there's decades previous in which they were ignored as well. How did you square that? Like, were you always sort of calling on the club to highlight the suffering of Palestinians, or is it did it all just sort of come to a head after the attacks of October 7th?
So for us personally, as I spoke to you earlier on, like in terms of the fallout between some supporters clubs and Celtic and St. Pauli, was to do a disagreement over that conflict, essentially, and different opinions not getting, in all fairness from what I've heard about it, not all opinions being rightly heard of or listened to, sorry. So we, as part of the ongoing thing to not just be seen as a mouthpiece for Celtic fans through St. Pauli, we obviously were quite mindful of putting out support on a regular basis for the Palestinian cause, because we knew what was going to come from it. And, you know, we'd put out a couple of things over the years, just highlighting some atrocities that were going on. And the exact same stuff was what we received years ago. It never on the same sort of level, purely because the club weren't involved in it. This was just a bunch of people from Glasgow in support of what was going on in Palestine, and then people in Germany taking it as, you know, because you dare to highlight support of Palestinians, it must automatically mean that you are in any way, you know, trying to silence Israelis. And it's, you know, I don't need to sit here and say that that's not the case. I think we've documented it more than enough. I think we're all three of us sitting here, none of us, I don't think, would be anti-Semitic in any views that we've got.
Yeah, it goes hand in hand with supporting an anti-fascist club, anti-racist, anti-homophobic. I don't see how anybody thinks that someone can sort of hold all those beliefs in concurrence with being a raging anti-Semite. You know, just from a, if you take a step back from that perspective, it's pretty obvious. But if it doesn't fit their narrative, obviously they're going to throw that at you. Dave, why do you think that it sort of fell on the international fan clubs to make a statement? I think we can all have some sort of understanding of why it is, but would you care to explain?
Yeah, I mean, there are obvious approach differences to the conflict, and they are rooted in different material conditions, and you have to, you know, take into account when viewing from the outside in, what's the, you know, the level of education and understanding of history is in different places and how it's approached. I think the other aspect that I touched on before is, and what has I think sometimes been missed on the international side, is this was a personal affliction to the club, in that it was friends from Hapoel. Now, I can't profess to know anyone from Hapoel, but I do have friends in Hamburg who went to the friendly, had a good time with them, and believe the people of Hapoel stand for the same things that we believe in. And the personal aspects that I think we missed on the international side is best summed up with what was the lad? Was it Liam, who was welcomed back at the last home game, who was taken hostage, who was, you know, known to the club. When you try to take a sympathetic view of why they took the approach they did and made the statement they did from those aspects, someone once wonderfully summed it up, that we as international fans have quite an idealistic view of St. Pauli because we are drawn to it. But we don't spend, although most of us spend more time watching football there than we do at home, but we don't spend time immersed in it. And until you are immersed in what the scene is in Hamburg and particularly in St. Pauli, we're just projecting our idealization of what we see coming out from it. And within that, when you take that original response from the club to what happened, I remember when we announced the friendly with Hapoel, there was a massive reaction from the international left, as it were, of, you know, you should be considering BDS, which for those who don't know is Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, which is a political movement to stop buying sort of exports from Israel that are on occupied Palestinian territory, which isn't something the club has signed up to, but there was an expectation at that time that we couldn't build these friendships with people in Israel because of the crimes of Likud and the Israeli government against Palestinians. So I think that's why it fell to the international left, because the views have, and ultimately the goal is the same, they just peace, but how we approach the polarization of it is potentially too far apart.
Good point. All right, so after that initial statement from the club, and then you mentioned that GSP put out a few things on Twitter and got a horrible backlash. So then came the letter that was signed by a number of international fan clubs. So was that drafted up and then the fan clubs could decide whether or not they wanted to sign it? Or was it, how did it get written? Was it an amalgamation of ideas?
Yeah, pretty much. It was an international chat on Twitter. People very hurriedly put out in the heat of the moment, because I think a lot of people were let down by the club. I know Dave mentions like about the fact like people might have ignored that it was to do with Hapoel and stuff, and I don't think that's entirely correct, because I think there was a lot of people understanding of the friendship that exists, and also understanding that Hapoel in itself is an anti-fascist football club that exists in Israel. It's a workers' football club. People understand that. I don't think like that point was getting ignored. I think people were just still not really assigning why the club would have to choose to have a personal connection to it just through, you know, a friendship that exists within supporters' clubs, to ignoring what has been going on. It's two different things. No one said they were wrong to acknowledge what had happened, and they were right to everyone said that from the very beginning. This is the thing that's constantly still getting ignored, is in the what we can say now is incredibly poorly worded first statement. There was still the sentence that every single fan club that were signatories to it condemned what happened, and that constantly was getting ignored. And again, at the very first time when the club put out that, we ourselves and every other fan club that were putting out their own comments were condemning what happened. It was just asking for a bit of understanding that what has been going on, and why stay silent on one side and speak up when it happens on another side. It's, you know, just it didn't sit within the anti-fascist values, which I'll get into a bit later. But like, in terms of what you're saying, yeah, it was a worded statement that was multilingual by various fan clubs piecing it together. You know, people like kind of quickly looking at the phone, looking at the latest edit of it, choosing whether to agree for whatever reason. I can't remember why. I'll be as honest with you as I can throughout this entire thing, but I can't remember why there was the need to have put it out as rushed as it was. I think in hindsight, if there wasn't such a demand to get it rushed out, it would have been worded better. The same points would have still remained, and it was never going to land well with the audience. That's the thing, you know. It was never going to. But sorry, on you go.
And I suppose that what you were sort of expecting from St. Pauli would have been something similar to the statement that you guys signed, so unequivocally condemning the actions of Hamas, but also recognizing the plight of Palestinians and, you know, all innocent lives matter. You can't highlight one atrocity and ignore another.
Well, you know, they did it eventually, but they had to, you know, pepper it with still these. They couldn't just come out and still say, you know, that this is what's been happening. It still had to be peppered with the fact that at that point they still believed, probably still do, that the IOF were deliberately targeting Hamas targets, you know, and everyone with a brain could see that wasn't the case, but the person in charge of the social media deemed that to be the only response that the club could put out publicly. And again, it was just, for some people, when the club did finally respond with that, it was, I think, maybe in the second post. This was on Twitter. I don't use any other social media platforms. I don't know what else it came out on. But in the second post, it signposted people to donating to a charity.
And Dave, Gary mentioned there that that letter was a little bit rushed, trying to get it out on time. Is that one of the reasons why Manchester St. Pauli decided not to sign it?
Yeah. So there's been a few instances over the years of international supporters coming together to do statements, and for a time they've just been quite introspective, navel gazing statements that are just designed to make people feel like they've done something. We genuinely didn't believe in this one it was the case, but anything like that, you know, the people who run the fan club have to agree with it all, and we couldn't get an agreement from our organisers, as it were. in the time frame that people wanted it to come out. And then within that, there was some issues with one of the unregistered fan groups who we disagreed with some of the comments they've made in the chat, and then actually externally of the chat on other social media, quite very close to the line when you know you are working up a hornet's nest. Don't be accusing or flippantly accusing Puma of being anti-Semitic because they've pulled out of the deal with the Israeli FA, because you've been accused of being anti-Semitic for standing up for Palestinians. Don't belittle anti-Semitism. So we eventually withdrew ourselves from the whole thing, because members of our organising committee didn't feel comfortable with what was going on. And we had conversations with that group after, and they saw nothing wrong with what they did. We didn't feel comfortable with it. And that's not to say every single signatory believe that. You know, as we said, I know Gary, and I've got ultimate respect for Gary, for people like Southend Scum, and other crews who have made the decisions they've made on the back of what happened. It's to be admired for their beliefs and the strength of their beliefs that they can walk away from something they love as a result of it. They've nothing but my admiration for that. And I know for everyone signing that statement, it was done with the best intentions, but it became an uncomfortable chat for members of our organising committee who weren't happy with the sorts of comments that were being bandied around. So, yeah, that's why Manchester ultimately didn't sign it. And, you know, it's sad because, you know, we've seen friends, unfortunately, sort of fall by the wayside as a result of it.
So there was a bit of a split in opinion within Manchester St. Pauli about whether or not to sign the statement?
Yeah, you know, the problem when you're trying to democratically deal with representing, you know, as I said before the call, 70 members, you've got to make sure that it's correct, and what you're doing is something that everyone is willing to stand by and go for. And at that point, we just weren't in a position where we could make it agreeable in the time frames that the people who wanted it out. And sometimes, you know, I think when you sit on reflection and on what followed, you think, well, what could we, and I talk as we as an international collective there, have done differently? How could we have approached this in a different manner? And I think some of the steps that followed are steps that could have happened before to really sort of make this the productive discussion of difference amongst the fan scene it could have been, rather than the inflammatory discussion of difference.
And there was quite a response to it, Gary. Were you expecting the backlash that it got?
From the statement, you mean?
Yeah, from that initial statement signed by multiple international fan clubs.
Yeah, I mean, what I was saying before, to answer the door there, was that it's, you know, when you've got a collective statement like that, as I said, getting rushed and getting done in across many different nationalities, like the wording of it was never going to be perfect, but it was still going to land the exact same way. Like, there was no, everything that had happened before this first statement was put out there was only ever going to be one outcome to this. It was never the kind of the mistrust had already been planted, if that makes sense. Like, you know, you were getting fellow supporters of St. Pauli making accusations towards you. You were getting online trolls engaging with the St. Pauli social media team, who were happy to engage with them, but happy to disengage from ourselves. You know, the club act following the first statement, I think it was. This was before any FCSR input. Following the first statement, the social media decided to unfollow Glasgow St. Pauli. At the same time, the person who I know, after having met him in Glasgow, Dunfermline, and in Hamburg, was actively engaging in someone who was responsible for creating the most amount of hate towards all the supporters' clubs. His own personal Twitter account was engaging with this troll quite openly and sharing his views about what he thinks of international supporters' clubs. So when that was known, that a club employee was, you know, openly sharing these views, and quite clearly his viewpoint wasn't going to be changed, and he was also quite responsible for the club's output, there was a lot of mistrust at that point. So
yeah,
anything that we put out, we knew it was never going to be landing with an audience that was going to read word for word. I mean, you put anything out on social media, no one's going to read it all, but within the certain paragraphs, the main body of the message was missed, and instead people just chose to read certain sections, poorly worded sections, and use that as their ammunition.
Yeah, I suppose you always expect to get a backlash from regular Twitter users who are, let's face it, vast majority of them are fucking idiots and won't actually read it, and they'll prejudge you based upon your beliefs of, you know, or other posts supporting Palestinians. But it must have been a real kick in the balls to see people who work for the club actively engaging in this trolling. And then you also mentioned not reading the statement, absolutely flying past the condemnation of Gaza, or of Hamas, sorry. Condemnation of what happened on October 7th, and still somehow reading anti-Semitism in that statement, which is what the FCSR did. Just for those who don't know, the FCSR stands for Fan Club Sprekerat, and they oversee all fan clubs, right? Not just international fan clubs.
For English-speaking listeners, Fan Club Sprekerat is directly translated to Fan Club Spokes Council. So as a registered supporters group, we sign up to the Fan Club Sprekerat, and they represent us as supporters groups and are a point of contact for supporters groups to get in touch and engage with the club.
And is it the club what's the club's involvement with the FCSR? Are they responsible for it?
It's one of those, I think it's described as like an appendaged body of the club, is the best way to describe it. It's kind of sits outside of the club. It's more closely tied to the Fanladen than the actual club. But they have some capacity within the club for representing supporters groups, is my understanding, and I'll happily be corrected on that.
I suppose this is where probably one of the main bones of contention for the clubs that signed that statement, because the FCSR reacted to that by saying that the statement downplayed and legitimized the terrorist attacks by Hamas, which is ridiculous. First of all they would have to do is read the statement to see that on multiple occasions those actions were condemned. And since they are sort of tightly linked to the club, now you're sort of moving away from just getting abuse on Twitter from random idiots to it actually having some link to the club. And any statement made in regards to Palestine now is getting labelled as anti-Semitic. Is that when the conversations first started about, do we have any future with this club?
So, representing Glasgow St Pauli, I attended a meeting that Fanladen facilitated in the stadium before a game. And with me was two members from Piratas del Sur. A couple of the supporters clubs that signed the statement were wanting to attend, but because they weren't registered fan clubs, the FCSR don't oversee them. So they weren't allowed to join. So that meeting was an attempt by the Fanladen to have a face-to-face in the hope that possibly any miscommunications between what international supporters clubs had put out and what the FCSR had responded with could have been miscommunication just over worded format. But it was very, 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 very clear from the beginning that in that meeting, the FCSR had absolutely no intention to listen to our side of view, which was, again, all we were asking from the very beginning of this was that the club support a ceasefire and the club acknowledge what had happened prior to the 7th of October. In their view, that was an anti-Semitic opinion to hold, and it was not something that they were willing to step back from, even though, like, you're sitting there saying, look, it couldn't be any clearer in the statement that was worded that there was nothing anti-Semitic within the statement. It's becoming laughable to keep having to keep saying this, but they were not willing to meet any sort of conditions that we'd proposed them at that point, where we'd asked them to, because it became an online spat of words and a couple of blogs that get involved who were furthering and inviting the hatred towards us. They decided that the best course of action would be to stop any online dialogue, which was, I think, the best thing to do. And in order for us to agree with that, we asked that they would come out with a joint statement with the international fan clubs and FCSR condemning what had happened, but also publicly asking for a ceasefire and acknowledge everything that had happened before. That was something that they were not open to in the first meeting. They couldn't get an agreement from them. So we then had another meeting set up online, which a lot more supporters clubs were able to attend. And at that meeting, that's when a lot more supporters, representatives, were exposed to the attitude of the FCSR. There was, you know, it was as if they were reprimanding us. That's the way it was kind of coming across. We were getting, I think one of their words were that supporters clubs had already crossed a line, I think was what they'd said. You know, that this was the sort of language that we're using just because of our views of asking for a ceasefire and ultimately asking the club to acknowledge what had been going on. So in that second meeting, the online one, a lot more supporters clubs were, I think at that point, the only club that had disbanded was Scum, and the writing was on the wall then when absolute diehards like that are turning their back on a club that of Christ, like, no, like what they devoted, you know, it seemed unthinkable that any supporters club was going to disband, but obviously Scum, it was too much for them, and they were absolutely right to do so, and it's not a decision that I don't think they regret anymore, because it's not the club that they supported. So from that meeting, a lot of other supporters clubs were starting to look at the possibility of disbanding. We expressed that to the FCSR, that their words were having this impact, and they've got the powers, if you like, to stop this happening, to stop people like myself and others who have devoted so much to a football club having to give that up. But ultimately, anything that we proposed to them came with. They sent us a report. I can't remember. They had it looked over by someone who, I think it was an 8-page report that they sent, and in that report was what they thought was anti-Semitic about. They tried to claim that they weren't being divisive, but ultimately within each page of the 8-page report was an accusation of anti-Semitism towards every supporters club. So they only had one narrative, and that was all that they were driving at, and nothing we could say was ever going to change this. And in the back of all this, you know, we're asking for a ceasefire. It's not a controversial ask. It shouldn't be. And when you're starting to feel like it's a controversial ask to supposed anti-fascist fan base and club, you know, the writing was on the wall. It wasn't a decision that we took lightly. So I personally was doing everything that I can with the sort of ability that I had to speak to people within the club. I'd had emails directly with club president explaining what was going on, and asking. This was the day before the AGM, so we'd asked for a couple of things to be raised at the AGM that he could bring forward as a motion. On the back of that, we'd kind of decided as a supporters club, if he wasn't able to, then we might have to consider disbanding, because we weren't ever going to get anywhere and the club was never going to come out with the asking for the ceasefire that we were wanting. For us to continue believing in this same football club, it was important for us that that club were back in a ceasefire. The time it got to the president was understandably just a wee bit too late for the AGM, so we continued having a dialogue and email to try and avoid going down the route of disbanding. In the emails, it was quite explicit that he supports a ceasefire. Any time we then asked for that to be put out by the social, you know, any social media or on the club website, anything like that, it was rejected. So we've got to ask the question as to why in private can we support a ceasefire, but we can't do it publicly. That's nothing then to do with it's a friendship of supporters clubs. There's an underlying issue here. And for us, you can't be calling yourself anti-fascist if you're ignoring the fascism that's existing. If you're not calling it out, you're not, you know.
You think it was a business decision in the end? Because I also heard the saying that, like, higher-ups at the club were fully supportive of a ceasefire, but God forbid the club makes a statement about it.
Well, that's like, it. I mean,
is it the backlash or business or afraid of losing money,
I think,
do you reckon?
You've hit the nail on the head for me. Look, it is a business, and, you know, like other football clubs who we've all maybe grown up supporting first, they've never come out as football clubs who are proudly anti-fascist. They're a business. They exist as a business. St. Pauli promote their anti-fascism. They promote all forms of inclusion. But when it comes to it, this was a very, 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 very serious issue. And it was a chance for them to stand against all forms of fascism. And for some reason, that didn't fit the business model.
I think the most disgusting aspect of it is that they actively make money off of promoting themselves as this anti-fascist club. They'll happily sell t-shirts calling themselves anti-fascist. But as soon as it becomes a bit inconvenient to uphold those values, they fucking crumble. Dave, how would you square that away? Like, Manchester St. Pauli still exist. I struggle with it myself.
I square it. I was at the Hanover game at the end of October, start of November, when I think it was sort of after, really in the heat of the aftermath, and I went to meet some friends from Hamburg outside the ground, and we started having the conversation, and it's where I see the issue of the polarity is the sort of the huge problem here, that everyone is aiming the same point from different end and start points. So we stood, and as you do before every game, stood outside the ground having a beer, having a chat, and my friend he spoke to me and he said, "I didn't see your name on that," and sort of quite rigorously questioned me. He said, "Because I know you and I know your beliefs, because we'd had those conversations before." So I told him where, you know, what our approach was. And he stuck his arm around me and said, "Dave, do you remember last time we talked about this? And we said, two drunken idiots outside of a kiosk in St. Pauli will never solve this." And I square it away is the DIY tagline is, it's not perfect, but it's better. And for my morals, the club, no, and I don't think it's the club in general per se. How you view the club is many different things. Is the club the apparatus that makes it work? So that's the presidents, the FCR, the fan lad, and is it all those things, or is it the supporters and all of these, be it international supporters, local supporters, be it people who support Palestinian rights and holding the Israeli government to account, or people from the word we've avoided, say the anti-Deutsch movement, who are quite pro-Zionist, or at least appear from with outside looking in to be quite pro-Zionist, or pro the aims of Zionism as opposed to Zionist altogether. It has always been this melting pot of ideas and places. I think the club is stuck in a stasis of its initial message. The aim of that initial message was the personal aspect. And as Gary said, there are parts of the apparatus of the club who support a ceasefire for whatever reason. I don't know if it's business. I don't know. I can't profess to know culture-wise if there's anything out there, and that's kind of sits in my brain. But you do, you know, you go around and you see that there's Palestinian Libre, there are Palestinian flags. There was a demo with 6,000 people just after Christmas, and you see these signs that we aren't all that far apart, but we've potentially picked the wrong place to discuss it. It's been because what has been natural for society since its inception is social media. It's so easy to fire your opinion on there and fire something flippant and very, very quick. And now because we've done it there and we've not gone, okay, let's sit back and let's have a conversation before we start firing things and accusing each other of. There was a really, really tragic point in the middle of it all, I remember, where essentially everybody was just calling each other a fascist. And one side was saying, "Well, you support Hamas-style fascism." And the other side was saying, "Well, you support Israeli fascism." And you just stood watching it going, have you listened to yourselves? And it became it became what it became. I think I reason with it with, we all want the same thing in the end. We're just approaching it wildly differently. And we've got to the point now, sadly, where it is entrenched, and all that happens is it's a head up above a trench, fire a tweet out, wait for the flat to come back, have an argument, and then we go around in this vicious circle.
But Dave, why are you then describing it as the great throne of the toys from the pram? You know, you've belittled what's happened to a lot of supporters clubs. A lot of
again, I just said
changed because of
the I've just said it's easy to be flippant on social media. I am not.
But this is all good, Dave. This isn't.
As if this I'm not avoidance to that, but that wasn't. Aimed at, it was a general, everybody took up and threw the toys from the pram. It's an idiom, but it's the only idiom to describe what happened at the time. And it's not one side or the other.
It performative as well. You've huh? supported it, Dave. You've also called it performative.
I believe there are, in some cases, elements of performative, and I stand by my flippant joke about, I think there are some people who will not be happy unless the players are sent out to the front lines because they've got themselves into this view that that's the club cannot do anything right at this point. But, you know, most people, and I've said particularly for yourselves and, you know, we know the Scum guys, I've the ultimate respect for the decision you made. There are some people who I think it has been a bit of a exercise in trying to be right, because that's just what we do. It's how life and politics operates these days, is people just want to be right. And none of anything over the last, what are we now, 6 months in, how has it helped? And that's the ultimate. Who have we helped? We've not helped anyone.
If what you're saying is that, you know, if it's not directed at the people that you know and the supporters clubs that you have said that you've respected their decision, then you can't be belittling other supporters clubs and saying that their decision to step away from something that they cared so much about by disbanding and not being involved in it anymore is performative. It couldn't be further from the truth.
You've taken that as an attack to you.
No, I just said that. I've just said from the beginning there. Like,
yeah, but there are groups out there.
Myself.
Huh? Sorry?
What I'd said at the beginning was, I know this was not directed towards myself and other groups that you know, but what I'm saying is those other groups that you are directing it to, you're belittling what they've done. I don't think you fully understand what it means to disconnect entirely from something that they would have gave a lot of their time to, over a belief that they have, to belittle it by...
If you think we didn't have similar conversations about where our future lies as well, you know, those conversations have happened in every fan group. I see them happening in another UK-based one. Those conversations have happened in every group. Those conversations are difficult conversations because of what people have attached to themselves. You know, it becomes a personality in and of itself, because you talk to people about it. And so I do understand, but there are some out there who really haven't covered themselves in glory.
You do often see that stick being used by the right to beat all of the left, like, oh, it's all performative, it's virtue signaling, you just want to be viewed as someone who's doing the right thing. But then it begs the question, so how do you do the right thing without it being called performative? How do you stand up for what is it objectively correct opinion if you consider yourself to be anti-fascist that you would call for a ceasefire, or not even anti-fascist, just if you're human. So at what stage does it move from being performative to just supporting what is right?
It varies based on your actions of what you're doing, but there are, and I'm not going to publicly drag or name where it comes from. Gary, I think you know who I'm talking about in particular.
Yeah, we'll not bring up individuals who aren't here to defend themselves.
And there are people out there who I think, you know, I go back to the point, who are we helping with the argument within the scene? Because it's not ourselves. It's caused a whole load of hurt, a whole load of friends have fallen out over what ultimately is a difference of opinion in how to approach something. But it's not stopped Israel and their operation in Gaza, leading to, I think at last count, was it 31,000 deaths? It's not freed any of the hostages that are still being held. And ultimately, the question you have to ask is, if the UN are today announced that the actions of preventing food and water getting into the Gaza Strip could be considered a war crime, and if Israel's response is to stick a finger up, where do we as individuals, when the might of what is probably considered international justice, although I'm sure we all probably wouldn't hold much regard for the UN, but that is in political circles what is considered. When the might of that is telling Israel, come on, let's consider your actions here because this is what they could be viewed as, and they say, well, we're going to keep doing it anyway. How do we as a fan scene, and if you just take the active or membership, which was 40,000, how do we help that? And aside from the diverting money, any other argument hasn't benefited the people of Gaza. It hasn't freed the hostages. And it's an incredibly blunt point, and I take that it's a blunt point. But other than hurt ourselves and fall out with friends, what have we in the international scene achieved from this, from what was, in my opinion, a horrendous misunderstanding in people basically just wanting the same thing, which is peace in the Middle East?
I suppose, Gary, your counter-argument would be that silence is compliance.
It is, and we said the exact same thing. And again, Dave, you're still not acknowledging, though. If you're moderating, if you're asking about what have we achieved in terms of the fan scene and what can we achieve, if people are coming on a message board and asking just general information, and your response is to summarise an entire movement that's happened within the fan scene as the great throwing of the toys in the pram, you've got a responsibility there, if you're moderating that, to not be continuing to stoke these fires. What's happened has happened.
I take that on board. I take that on board. I think you know me and my personality is there's often very little seriousness in me.
I'd say maybe once or twice, Dave, but these are continuing. So I'm just saying, if you've got that ongoing responsibility, and this is, this call has been happened, it's March everything that happened was back in October. We're still kind of talking about this. So if it's getting continued to be talked about, then comments like that are just going to keep this ongoing. And if you're wanting to achieve anything within the fanzine, continuing to create this division is not going to be the way forward for doing it.
And in terms of what the international community could actually do, I suppose the objective was never that Netanyahu's not going to look at these posts or banners and pull out of Gaza, right? It was more holding the club accountable more than anything, I suppose. And if you're going to proclaim to be anti-fascist and to stick up for the underrepresented, then that's got to be across the board.
Absolutely. I mean, all it needs... Sorry to interrupt. All it needs to, you know, the minute you've got us... Every single person that's been involved in this have dedicated a lot of themselves to a football club. Like anything else, any time you get a seed of doubt, it's the last thing you want, because you've gave so much to something and all of a sudden your beliefs are getting challenged. So the only thing that you would then hope for is that the one thing that you believe in could turn around and still be that, in this case, that football club that openly supports all anti-fascism would continue. But when that seed of doubt creeps in, it's not the same anymore, if that makes sense. You know, you can't continue, and, you know, some supporters clubs have chosen to continue, and that's their decision. I don't agree with it, because if they've got any sort of feeling that this club might not be the same, then not really too sure how you can continue with the same level of dedication that you can, because ultimately, in our opinion now, the majority of our members, St. Pauli are now just another football club, still want them to win matches. And, you know, by all accounts, it's certainly looking like this year might be the year that they actually finally win a trophy. But it's not like, it's not the same feeling, if that makes sense. You know, there's no dedication to it anymore. Some of our members will continue, like they've got a belief that things will come good in the end. I don't know what that looks like personally, but for people to continue to believe in a football club that they thought it was, I'm not sure how you continue with it personally. To me and to others, it's just another football club now.
And what I'd say, that a slightly different point, and where we came to reasoning to continue, the Keys Quake, which, for those who don't know, is the name given to the point where the locals in the area took out the club and kicked people out, is only 40 years ago. So for many people, it's in living memory. St. Pauli, as it is, hasn't existed as what people in Gary's view believed it to be, people believe it to be, or people project what they think it is onto it. Hasn't existed, you know, all that long, really, in terms of its history. And to shape it and remodel it and you know, help its evolution, you can only do that from within. And when you take, for us, the seeds of what is something with the potential to be very good, and on this aspect, maybe there's definitely work to do in how, and I think it's how we all engage with it. You know, that's my thing when I said, when you look back in retrospect about how the statement came about, would, in reflection, if we'd have gone back, would I have said, well, do we engage with the club before engaging in a social media statement, be that the fan lad and the fan club Sprecher Act? But you can only change and bring that, what people would view to be positive change, from within, and giving up the fight against people who, And I believe it is a very, very small proportion, a very small minority of people within the club who maybe have views that we completely disagree with on. And it's mostly just on this one topic, but you can't change them by leaving the fight, which is for me very hypocritical, given I've left the political party in this country, or I was forced out of the political party in this country under sort of quite similar circumstances. And I guess it's part, you know, I'm driven partly by that personally, that I think there is more good than there is bad currently, and we can make the good good, but we have to do what was done in the past, which is help shape it, and it will only improve if we help shape it and, you know, think about how we help shape it.
I think that's fair enough, Dave. If you're welcome to, by speaking up, other supporters clubs were chased out, and that's the reality. Is at first what we deemed to be an online presence of supporters only seemed to have an agenda against international supporters clubs, quickly became very apparent that this wasn't just online, with banners seen in the stadium, with how the FCSR reacted. You know, we were chased away from that club because of views we held, and those views weren't the extreme views that they thought they were and wanted them to be. They wanted the one narrative, and that was all that they needed to chase people away from a club. Now, that is the people that do exist within the club themselves and within very influential supporters' bases. So I'd had that conversation with people, you know, around Bring Back St. Pauli campaign and stuff, and it was all about, like, the fact that you do need supporters to be standing up and fighting for what's right. And that's all well and true, but it wasn't international supporters that were carrying the voice at that point. And the minute an international collective voice tried to put its head above and make itself heard, it was not welcome. And for a club that promotes internationalism, that's quite concerning.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, because there's the FCSR and St. Pauli, who threw the international fan clubs under the bus. And then we also spoke about, well, what is the club? Is it those people or is it the fans? But at the same time, we had fans in the Gingerada who held up a banner that was almost certainly directed at Glasgow St. Pauli. It read, "From Gaza to Glasgow, fight anti-Semitism, free Palestine from Hamas." So whether the club is the higher-ups or the fans, they're all against you, right? And that banner was purely provocative, right? They were just trying to get at you. So how do you stand at a match shoulder to shoulder with people who are slanderous towards you? Like, anti-Semitism is a very, very serious accusation, especially in Germany. So where do you go then? You know, how can you? And as you said, if you do think you can change it, then the FCSR, who are supposed to represent you, also believe you to be anti-Semite. So it's tough.
You know, the facts is that there's been two viewpoints throughout this entire thing. And what we have seen is one viewpoint is welcome the Millenthorne, one's not. And that's it. And as you said there, look, you know, I don't, from what we've read, we don't think that banner was directed towards our supporters club. And this isn't about our supporters club. This is about all supporters clubs that disbanded. But just because that banner mentioned Glasgow, fairly certain it was in response, again, to something related to Celtic. Not entirely sure what it was, but I think there was certainly a retaliation from Celtic fans to that banner. So they obviously seen it was directed to them. But the banner that I seen when I was at the game the morning of the FCSR meeting was you know, in our banner, we've got the Nay Football for Fascists that we had. And there was a banner from the same section of Gegengrada that read, "No football for anti-Semites," pointed directly at the Sud. Now, they know that's where the international fans are mostly housed. So there was, right from the very off, there was banners directed purely to the international supporters clubs. And those views certainly went unchallenged, as did the bigger banner that you've mentioned. Whereas yourself, Luke, and the others in your supporters group were seen as controversial for holding up your banner. And, you know, there's a time to admit that it's not the club that you thought it was.
I'm sure you're very disappointed in the local fans and these fan groups who are so quick to speak out about every other political issue. And then we have one of the deadliest conflicts of our time happening.
Most humanitarian crisis, you know, and the club's just sitting there putting out mealy-mouthed statements that's just meant to... In all honesty, I think it's just an attempt to continue to make sure that their business is continuing. If they put out something that's enough, that's...
What about the fan groups, though? Because they surely don't have the club's business interests at heart. I did speak to someone from a fan club, and he was moaning, like, oh, all these international fans telling us how to run our club or how to support our club. They can all fuck off back to wherever they're from. But that doesn't sound very aligned with what they proclaim to stand for, right? I expected more from the fan clubs locally, to be perfectly honest. I'm very disappointed. And like, I've heard that there have been a lot of splits in the opinions of, I suppose, similar to what happened with you in Manchester, Dave, that if they couldn't agree, then nothing gets said.
This goes back to what I said about when I attended the Hanover game and me and a couple of friends had a chat. In the majority were, you know, I just see people who ultimately feel, and it goes back to the point about sort of what's done to help the situation. There's a helplessness in that this is a now decades-long conflict, and, you know, I'm always mindful talking about it as someone coming from Britain, because this goes back over 100 years to the Balfour Declaration, which was Britain starting to carve the place up before they'd even got their hands on it, before the Ottoman Empire. As with everything, wherever Britain has had its hands over the years, there is a pool and trail of blood left behind. And ultimately, you're dealing with something that's hundreds of years old in terms of a view of a claim on land and territory. You've got forces, as well as the Israeli forces, who are using Palestinian lives as fodder for their wars against Israel. So their external forces playing on it. And when you look at it in the round, people look, and, you know, I've sat and I've tried to read and taken as much trustworthy media as you can on the situation without, and it's easy to open Twitter these days and see horrendous images, but trying to look and read the history and the background of it and read, you know, scholarly studies that are available online, and you sit there and you go, so how does this get fixed? And that's what I see, where you see these splits. It's people just don't know what to do. They don't know how this conflict comes to a logical end without what looks like is going to be the probable end of it, if things continue the way they're continuing. And when I talk to friends who live and are based in Hamburg, as I do quite regularly, and we discuss the topic, it's we don't know. We just don't know. And that, I think that's where you get a lot of the stasis from, in the middle of the fan. The fan scene, as opposed to the other two ends of it.
I'll be honest, Dave, I'm surprised that the one Englishman on this podcast was the one to bring up the Brits and their involvement in all of this, so I'd appreciate it.
Look, you can't be a leftist and deny British history, and I'm as critical of it as anyone, yeah. Much to my very conservative dad's behest, but you have to, you go back to a genesis, and that's the genesis is 1917 and Britain taking rulers to the map and going, right, okay, this is what we're doing. And then in 1948, just up and abandoning the situation and letting the rest of the world look to sort it out.
I think you almost got to the crux of it about how it's working with St. Pauli fans here, where because it's so complicated for Germans and they have such a difficult relationship with Israel and their actions, that they don't really know where to fall on this, so they just stay silent, a lot of them. But then for people like Gary or for other fan clubs to sign up, that's simply unacceptable. It's not enough. If you proclaim to be anti-fascist, then you need to stick by that. So I think I understand where everyone's coming from, really. And
I guess it's difficult for us to put ourselves in those shoes. And I think the statement put out by the fan clubs tried to say that, and I think, again, as Gary touched on before, it was multiple languages, adding it came across quite clumsily, to say that we understand, I think the statement itself said, we understand the history, which was one of the things I remember reading that people had got quite upset about, and I think they felt quite patronised by, and it's why I've kind of tried to float around it, but I can't put myself, as much as I have really close German friends, in their position, and try and understand it from their perspective, and. If you feel like all you can do is look on with horror, then that's got to be an uncomfortable feeling. It's uncomfortable to think about it, but it is very much where we find ourselves in how we approach things from our own sort of material backgrounds, it's easy to be anti-imperialist in English because you've benefited from imperialism your whole life, so it's easy to criticise it.
I think that is, in the broader sense, the silence of the local fanzine in Germany as a whole throughout this is the chosen stance for, we can only guess as to the reason as to why that is their feeling. I think everyone shares the same opinion, that there does seem to be a sense of guilt that seems to just lie over anything seen as being anti-Israel or anti-Israeli forces is automatically got this guilt, as it would be dangerous for them to be sharing those views because of, you know, their country's past. But staying silent is maybe an option that they've chosen, but there is still the dangerous aspect of choosing to not stay silent and instead issue accusations of anti-Semitism, which is the sort of, I think we've all got friends in Germany who are on the side of wanting to stay silent because it's a they see it as a complex issue. We don't obviously see it as a complex issue. It's very black and white. People have been massacred in the thousands. It shouldn't be complex. But we're not in their scenario. We're not in their shoes. So
it's sort of asking the Palestinians to carry the brunt of their shame, you know, which just isn't fair. And you'd think of people who presided over a genocide once before should be more attuned to the hallmarks of it and do everything in their power to prevent it. So it's very disappointing.
As Gary says, we can view it out with quite black and white because we aren't approaching it from that standpoint, although go back to my point, Brits probably should. There's more than enough historical evidence of things like the Bengal famine, the Irish famine, impacted by British government's actions, that maybe we should have a similar viewpoint, but we can't because we aren't taught those things in the same way, and we aren't given the same level of understanding of the darkness of our history. So it is tricky to put ourselves, and that's why the conversations I have with friends out there are always quite, you know, always end with, but how can we help? I go back to it because that's unfortunately what seems to be the majority view. But it is, you know, I've said it before, you know, there is some sign of what, from the international standpoint, people would consider good people out there who are willing to carry the can and make those fights. And there's people who I know and have met who I've seen supporting the international fan clubs who've gone and regret losing them because they saw them as an important part of the fan scene, but also that they supported the message that they said, which was, you know, here we need to view both sides of this.
Yeah, just on the whole, oh, well, what can we do sort of argument, these same people did plenty when it came to the war in Ukraine. You know, there was the club did a lot. There's, whether it just be speaking up about it or raising funds, we should say that the club has made two posts calling for supporters to donate to humanitarian causes in Gaza. But if you compare that with what the club and the fan groups did in reaction to the war in Ukraine, it's night and day. So I don't really buy this, like, oh, we're staying impartial because there's nothing we can do anyway.
I don't think it's a staying impartial thing. I think it's an incredibly conflicted on what, or, you know, it's, I don't believe people are genuinely just wanting to stand by. I think that there's just, it's a mindset we cannot put ourselves in because of the way we approach history. And I remember ages ago, I think, I don't know if it was a Glasgow tweet, but someone responded, might have been Scum years ago, tweeted something and regarding Israel Palestine, and, you know, the someone provided quite a flippant response of, well, if your grandparents had stood by, and it kind of feels I can't put myself in that shoes to think about that because I'm not taught it in that way. You know, I've had to learn about the crimes of British governments through my own steam.
I understand that we have to be mindful of the history of Germany and that their experience is different to ours, but then surely that goes both ways. They should recognize that I have a strong opinion on Palestine because I'm Irish and my nation was colonized. We went through a famine as a means of genocide. So surely they should take that into consideration before calling me an anti-Semite, you know?
No, I totally get that. And it's just I guess the point I'm trying to make is we all approach it with our own material background, and it's easy for us to impose our views out with. But you've obviously got Gunnar on this podcast, and living out there, you will have German friends who will be able to better describe it than I can, trying to describe how it's been described to me by my friends. I think that's...
Yeah, maybe we should have had a German on here.
Yeah, explain it. Maybe not one of the anti-Ds, but someone who can reason the points slightly.
We are making excuses for the club right now. If this was a conflict that didn't involve Israel, we wouldn't be having this conversation. The club have chosen the output that they want about this. I want to say issue, but it's not. It's a fucking humanitarian crisis. And they've chosen what they're wanting to say about it. As Luke says, they were only too happy to have no war in the billboards around the stadium during what happened in Ukraine. They were only too happy to use their voice and you know, did they have a t-shirt out? It wouldn't surprise me if they did. But like they were promoting what they believed to be a one-sided opinion at that point. And right now they are choosing to stay silent on an issue when other German clubs, I think it might have been Baselberg, right at the very beginning, came out with a fantastically worded statement for a German club who were not afraid. You know, we're talking about what could be done, what good can a football club do and stuff like that. Or St. Pauli could be using their broad fan base as a template to stand up in Germany and actually promote standing up for Palestinians instead of promoting this idea that anything said against Israel is anti-Semitic. And they've chosen to stay silent and they've just encouraged this same attitude to continue.
And
they've got a response.
It's a
broad fan base and they need to acknowledge everyone's point of views.
It's a very valid point. And again, we go back to how could we have done this differently going back, because when you look at the time, and I mean, I must admit, my instant response to the original statement by the club was, this is going to go down like a lead balloon in certain circles. Not that, you know, I didn't think it was that controversial a statement, particularly taking into account the relationship with Tel Aviv. But I knew the reaction that was going to come because we'd seen it earlier that year with the response to the announcement of the Tel Aviv friendly. And so you go back and the damage, unfortunately, for various international people was done very, very early. And, you know, it's not critiquing what those who said you need to look at this both sides were doing, but the way that discussion quickly escalated and quickly became a tweet slinging match meant that at any point after that, it was pretty much barren and dead in the water. And, you know, I think you look at it at the time and, you know, it was a statement saying, this is something that's happened. It's the greatest loss of Jewish life in a single incident since the Shoah. And I know some people out with the international groups saw the international group's response. And I'm saying this is an opinion that's been shared with me, not my opinion, but out with the international groups viewed it as a bit of a yeah, but at the time, because there was obviously a lot of hurt and feeling and brought out about the attack by Hamas on October the 7th. And what the international clubs, like I said, was seen by some as it, okay, yeah, that's sad, but which we know in you know, most cases wasn't the intention. The intention was to highlight the plight of Palestinian people and what we now know is gone on to be quite a brutal campaign against them in Gaza. And I think it's expanding into Rafah, isn't it? But at the time, looking back, I know that's what some of the opinions were into people or people viewed it as. Something really tragic has happened. You know, there's the IHA argument on what constitutes comparing or combining the opinion of Israeli and Jewish, but it was the biggest loss of Jewish life in one incident since the Shoah. And you can see why in the immediacy now, not what's gone on in the last 6 months, but in the immediacy, why people viewed it in that way.
And I think I've taken up enough of both your times already. We're over an hour and a half here, but
no, got some good editing to do.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know who I should direct this question at, but I'm sure there's a lot of fans who are of the same opinion of as me. They disagree with how the club has handled this. So is it possible to separate the football from the club? Can you still support the team? Because I really still love this group of players and feel like we're on this journey towards promotion together. And as much as I disagree with them, I just find it so hard to walk away. Are you able to separate the two, do you think?
I don't think we should. I think the two need to be linked. And as I said, I think there's still something good there to be fought for. And Gary, clearly, I mean, you'll have a different opinion to me on that. And you know, that's, but I think in terms of, like you say, the group of players, it's the best group of players since the last promotion lot, clearly, in terms of what the club stands for, you know, lots of work to do, but it was always lots of work to do. There was always, it was easy to look out and in and think, yeah, this is brilliant. But when you got down to it, there was always work to do. Just for some people, I know this has become a bit of a red line, clearly. And, you know, they've made the choice that's best for their hearts and minds. And that is admirable.
The thing is, look, like the football, if a lot of people have been honest, like since the change in the club from the 80s onwards, when they wanted to bring it as a more radical football club, not just the fans, the club, then football wasn't always the main attraction. And anyone that's been, that goes over, they go over for friends, they go over for the for the atmosphere of being at an event with friends that you wouldn't get here, you know, in the same sort of context. So the football was a vehicle for a lot of us, really. And I think we'd be lying to ourselves because I think we've certainly Dave and I over the years have said in various podcasts that the football is secondary to what the club mean to us. So for us, it's been a case of we do still, for the people that are interested, we'll still watch the games, but it's a get-together. You know, there's a disconnect between what's happening in the pitch to what we're actually feeling, if that makes sense. You know, it's no longer when the club were, like, when you were at games and stuff like that, it was an amazing feeling getting a rare win, but it wasn't what your entire weekend was about. It was what St Pauli stood for, and St Pauli for us and for all the other supporters clubs that have made the same decision, they don't stand for the same thing anymore. So for separating the football to the club, it's been pretty easy because it's the actual club that's been that feels like the loss, if that makes sense. It's what they stood for that we're detached from now. So while we still watch a football, it's just like watching any other game of football, and I don't really have particularly strong feelings about any other football club. So I'll watch it, but you know, what I used to watch, it stood for something that it doesn't stand for anymore.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat. Like, I'll still go to the matches and support the team, but it's definitely dulled the experience because, as you said, the primary thing was that you were in a ground with nearly 30,000 like-minded people and you thought you all stood for the same thing, but now that's been completely wiped out for me. So yeah, it's definitely different, and I would say less enjoyable knowing that the people standing beside you might consider you to be an anti-Semitic piece of shit because you don't want to see children getting murdered indiscriminately. So yeah, it definitely takes the shine off, but obviously it's a bit rich for us to sit here and moan that we lost our football club when there's people suffering to such an extent in Gaza right now. So we should probably keep that in mind too. All right, nice cheery end of the podcast. Sorry about that. appreciate both of you coming on. Yeah, I think that was an interesting conversation. We touched on pretty much everything I wanted to. I think it's good for a lot of international fans who can't spend, you know, 12 hours a day on Twitter keeping up with all this crap to get a good understanding of what's going on and why certain fan clubs have decided to stick around and some have dissolved. But yeah, I can respect both opinions on that. Thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having us.
Thanks so much.
Cheers. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week reviewing the Paderborn game, which is on Sunday. Cheers. Bye-bye.